Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. I was waiting to do that for a bit. Anyway, welcome to Everything in Between.
That was good.
Thank you. Thank you. The dad and daughter podcast where we talk about ghosts and urban legends and true crime and everything in between. I have completely forgotten what the actual intro is, but I feel like this is more casual, you know? It's more intimate. It's more...
We've evolved.
We've evolved. We've learned. We've changed.
I don't know about learned. Change, yeah.
We've learned that it's
so
boring.
So who are you?
I'm Emma.
And I'm the dad.
That's a niche. I guess we haven't changed in a bunch of ways. We're back for a little bit of a surprise episode. It's my spring break, which is why...
Of your senior year.
Of my senior year of college.
This is crazy. Junior year, you did this in high school, and now...
Yeah, and we went on hiatus right before I started freshman year of college.
I know.
So, kind of crazy.
It is. I mean, yeah. So,
I'm
yeah.
21 years old now.
Yeah.
I was a minor when we started this.
Okay. All right.
So that's a lot of...
Gotta stop living in the past here. Let's go.
Well, I tried with my fun, funky new intro, but just seems...
That wasn't the past. That was the future, which just makes me feel even older now.
Okay. Well, we have some things to talk about.
That's true. No, it's been a long time. I can't even think of when the last one was. I know we tried to surprise folks.
Yeah,
might have been over the holiday break. I don't even
remember. Well, we did a Christmas special and then we did a different special.
Was that 23? 20, it must have been.
I think so.
Again, I'm so old. I can't remember yesterday.
I don't have an excuse. I can't remember yesterday either.
You actually are working.
Hard
you
have. That yeah, I'm doing.
Okay. We were planning on doing this over the winter, your whatever, winter break, whatever they call it, the long one you have.
Winter break?
Well, yours is long compared to your brother's.
But it's still winter by the end of it.
Yeah, true. But we have to give a shout out because the plan at that time was, as we've mentioned in the past, we head up to Maine a lot. And there's a guy we met, his name's Jason. And shout out to Jason because we were going to try to get Jason on the pod, but we just... January didn't work. We weren't even up there, so we didn't get to get him on there. So Jason, I apologize if you're listening to this. We will hopefully maybe the summer if we can get up there to do this because, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, because Jason's great. He's got some great stories and, you know, like mind, and he's a big D&D guy. So
yeah.
All of the things there. So again, Jason, I apologize, but we will make it right.
We will.
All right. And then the other things that we were laughing about.
Well, I mean, also, if I don't have a career after this,
okay,
after
stop.
Graduating college, and I'm just living at home, I guess that just means that we'll have to start the podcast.
This is
back
like
up
the
again.
Segue to a horror film and how we're going to talk about
horror films.
If I
don't move out
films.
Until I'm 40 years old, then we could do the podcast until I.
Yeah, okay. We're going to stop right now. Stop. Oh, my God.
Just wishful thinking, I guess.
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, to segue to horror.
Oh, my God.
A lot of
movies.
Yeah. Well, we were looking at because everybody's doing their, you know, best of, which is, I guess it was best of 23. And then already they're, I mean, we're only into March and people are talking about, oh, well, here's so what's so great in
2024.
Yeah. So, because it's been so long, I think we're going to go through just quickly what we had seen since maybe the last podcast.
Yeah.
To go. So we'll just go through the list. You can just, and then we'll just quickly talk
yeah,
about them.
Yeah.
So
why don't
you just
list what of we've... what to and what to not watch.
Yeah. And I know you've world. Seen a lot more than I have.
I don't
partially
think that's
because,
true.
Well, I don't get to watch any because it's basically, no. I can't, you know.
Yeah. But you've got like several decades on me.
Yeah. But that doesn't matter. Like, again, you are the future. And again, if you have a job, I assume you'll be just watching more horror movies, which... Well. Anyway, yeah, let's go.
Okay, well, I'll start with one of our more recent watches, which was Ghost Watch.
Yeah.
And although I guess we're pretty late to the party here.
Well, I don't know if we could have seen it, like, besides renting.
Yeah, it wasn't really available anywhere. Yeah. But I just meant because it came out in the 90s and, you know, it's 2024 when we're watching it. So I'm sure most people at least already know of Ghost Watch.
I don't know. I mean, because it's a UK thing, so
I suppose.
BBC, whatever. Actually, before you even go there, the one thing we will say is that we subscribed to Shudder way back
because of the horror. Yeah, before it was cool.
And I am happy still because they definitely, I mean, they'll do, there's a bunch of things now that Shudder just gets first run, a lot of foreign films, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about here. But we're big proponents, but we did the AMC Plus this time. So we could get all the other ones mm-hmm. to do it. So recommend that because you get Shudder plus all these other things. The only thing I will say is that if you do Shudder alone, the interface is so much better.
Yeah.
On everything. But anyway, it's yeah. So cool. Ghostwatch.
We're not sponsored either, unfortunately.
But Ghostwatch. Well, go through the list and then we can talk.
Okay. Ghostwatch is one of them. Last night we just watched Cobweb.
Yes. That was Hulu, right?
Hulu, yeah. Then we watched... Well, I guess this is not in order, but When Evil Lurks.
That was a Shudder.
Which was Shudder, so AMC Plus.
And that's the dude. It's Argentinian.
Yes,
and
this is the guy that did Terrified.
Which we were big fans of Terrified.
I'm pretty sure we talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, we did. We talked about Terrified. Yeah.
Then Dad hasn't seen this, but I watched Talk to Me in theaters. Oh, my God. So good.
I think we should say it this way. It's so good. I know you said it the moment you watch it. Your brother saw it.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you a story. I tell a story about your brother. And he bought it. So.
While he was sober.
Okay. Stop now. Stop now.
But yeah, I loved that movie. I did watch it in the middle of the day. But I remember I walked out of there, and even though it was the middle of the day, I still had like these chills. Like, oh my God. I just thought it was such a creative concept, and both the beginning and the ending just had my jaw on the floor. It was so good.
Well again, I'll talk about your brother that as well. Because I remember, so he wanted to watch a horror film as well. So he was talking about a bunch of movies, and they just couldn't figure it out. And I don't know what happened. So they went to the theater, and I just said, look, you had told me about Talk to Me. So I said to him, if you want to see a good horror movie, you know, Emma said, blah, blah, blah. It's isn't great. So just go see Talk to Me. After the movie, he texted me and he was just basically saying, oh my God. Oh my God. He goes, just so you know, I have to take an Uber home. I am not walking back. And I sat there and to me, it was like the most proud moment because I was kind of like that. I mean, I know movies are supposed to be from the visual aspect for all these other things. It's great. But that to a horror fan is just mm-hmm, the sweetest words you can hear is that, yeah, I'm so afraid to even get home that I have to watch it. I cannot believe I haven't.
And you know what? I would watch that again if you want to watch it at some point. Because, I mean, you should watch it whenever you can watch it because I can't believe you haven't seen it yet.
It's either watching it by myself or I'm going to have to watch it people who've seen it before because there's no way your mom's going to watch it.
Maybe you could watch it with the... Wait, Sabs doesn't like horror, does he?
No, I think he does. But again, I don't think he's... I think it's just one of those things like, yeah, I think he's... No, I don't know.
Well, you could lure him here with the story that, I found this cool new tech thing. And then he walks in and the doors lock, you know?
Yeah, no. So. I mean, if I asked, I think if he wanted to, it'd be fine. I'll figure it out. I'll watch it.
Well,
I'll watch it. But go ahead. For your list.
100% recommend Talk to Me. And another incredible one that we watched was The Dark and the Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I don't know if Talk to Me is streaming yet.
I think it's only to rent. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know where you can find it.
Oh, actually, yeah. I'm not so sure.
It might be somewhere, but we don't know. So you're going to have to do the research yourself. Anyway, Dark and the Wicked, it is on AMC Plus / Shudder.
Yeah.
So we loved that one.
That was one where... I don't want to say predictable is the wrong word, but the foreshadowing in real time.
Yeah.
It's so vivid. And you're just like, oh my God, this is going to happen. And then it happens and you're still like, oh my God. And
yeah.
The acting is great. And it's just,
It's like a folk horror. Yeah. And it's very atmospheric. I think that was like the biggest thing that we were talking about afterwards was how like it maintained the tension really well. And I think we cared about the characters a lot, and it just like had us the whole time.
The female lead is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could, and I just had seen her. We finally watched Justified, the new series. Right. And the whole time I'm watching Justified, I'm like, why do I know her? And then also I'm like, oh my God, The Dark and the Wicked. I wish I knew her name just to give her credit, but I will watch anything she's in regards because she is just great. And that helped for that film. But
And then another one we watched was Hosera?
Hosera,
The Bone Woman.
Which
is on Shudder as well, I think.
Yeah, and again, it's also it's a Latin American or Central American folklore. I can't remember the area.
Guatemalan, but I can't remember for sure.
I don't remember the area, but it's in that one. realm of the La Llorona kind of folklore.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, for me, I found it less like in your face scary, but more of like the more I thought about it afterwards, it was like, it just, you know, it's a movie that really makes you think, but it's not a movie that like tries to set itself up to be super like what's the word when you're it's all like very cerebral,
right?
But it just feels that
way. It's definitely psychological though, and it takes on real world issues with the folklore. And the woman, I think she wrote it and directed it. I would, again, another one. Anything she does, I would do it. Because I know she's done a bunch of short films, but that was great. Yeah. Big fan of that one.
And let's see. I've got two films on here that we did not like, and then one more that we did like. So should I lead with the two that we didn't like?
Yeah, I go with the didn't like, and then we can end with the one we liked.
Okay. So, I think this is a controversial opinion because I've seen a lot of people really like this movie, but we were not a fan of Evil Dead Rise.
Rises. I mean, we're fans of
The franchise.
And the whole piece, but yeah. I mean, I think if you're into it, was visually, I mean, I guess I can say like the filming, all that was great, and
I think one thing that everybody who watched the movie can agree on is that the opening title sequence is fantastic.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is. It just seemed, I don't know.
It was because I feel like what they were trying to do was take like the campiness of the originals and the scariness of the remake and do both, but they couldn't do enough in either category to make it like actually work.
Yeah. And I mean, anything, since again, it has to deal with children. So anything with children's always should be decent. Actually, we should, the When Evil Lurks, we didn't really like. So I think we talked about it as we liked. So we talked about it.
Oh, we did say, yeah, we didn't really like that one.
So I think it's in that same realm, right? With Evil Dead Rises, is that the concept, because When Evil Lurks also has a lot to do with children, and the things that happen there, you're like, wow, and there's a shock value to it. Not gratuitous, I would say.
No.
But I think with Evil Dead Rises, they were trying to do the same thing. So it's almost as if they could take those two films and take the best of both, I think you would have
something good.
You would have the one. But again, you know, it's all subjective. We're not going to say. I think if you're an Evil Dead fan, you should see it, because just to be in the world because of the evil. But I don't know. I just, I think it got too much to that torture porn piece that I was kind of, and again, if that's your thing, then you'll love it.
And I think also that like it, I get that it was trying to be inventive and creative by having it take place in an apartment building.
Yeah.
But I just don't think that it worked, really. I think I saw somebody's review about it on Letterboxd, which I'll give a shout out to my own Letterboxd in a second.
You should follow her Letterboxd.
But I saw a review that someone was like, every scene was just somebody turning the corner to a new room in the apartment to find out that someone had gone evil. And so it was just like, it was just too condensed. Like, it was just the same formula over and over again, which I really agree with.
Fair.
But yeah. So another movie that we didn't like, which honestly, I feel like isn't even worth mentioning really, because it was just so
Like, it's an older film too.
It's right? older. Yeah. Well, it's probably like 2017 or something like that.
Was the podcast even out then?
Well, but considering the history of horror, it's
fair.
But I don't know. We had pretty high hopes going into this one, I think, because Florence Pugh is in it. But we watched Malevolent, which it was just so disappointing.
It didn't start out disappointing. I feel right, because I think we talk about this stuff, is that it's subjective. So mm-hmm. I don't want it to be that you may like it this, but and I don't want to.
We're the ones with the microphone. So
it still got made. So like, that's the part
this
of it.
This is true. There. But a lot of movies get made that are
true. But the thing that was interesting was that, again, the premise, like you're watching it, you're like, okay, this is cool. And here's what's going on in the paranormal part. And mm-hmm. It's been done. So it's not that you're sitting there like, oh, wow, there's something new. And then there's just this point where you're just kind of like,
it just
what?
Goes off the rails.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not even in a memorable way where it's like a good, bad horror movie. Yeah. It's just like dumb.
Yeah. I just feel guilty though now because we're like
trashing all these movies.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah.
I don't think those people are listening to this
podcast. I understand, but it's just still, it's like, you know.
And if they are, make better movies.
Well.
Sorry. Maybe hire me.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm almost graduated. I need a job. Okay, but wrapping up with one that we did like was Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Yes. Yes.
Which we'd been wanting to watch for a while, and then we only just recently actually got to see it. Also on Shudder/AMC+.
Right, another foreign film.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about real life issues and then adds the supernatural piece to it, because it's all about the orphans mm-hmm. from the drug trade.
I was just gonna say that it reminded me a lot, I don't know if anyone listening has seen these movies, but I don't know 100% how to pronounce the first one, but it's called Los Olvidados, I think. Great movie. I've only seen it because I took a film class that I watched it in, so it's just me being pretentious. But it's a great movie. Tigers Are Not Afraid really reminded me, like, stylistically of it. And also another one that it reminded me of was the movie A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Which I love that movie. Such a good movie. Highly recommend.
That's black and white?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's from 2014.
I haven't seen it, but I know.
It's from Iran.
Yeah.
So good. Highly recommend that one. So those are the
that's
films.
Like our year in kind of review.
Yeah. But also, we started off with Ghost Watch. And I think that one we really liked because it really held up.
I was shocked. I think when we put it on, I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever. But mm-hmm. just for the background for folks, you should watch it because when it came out the time, it was portrayed as a live BBC
broadcast,
show, right? And it was probably one of the first, mockumentary type films. And apparently it caused chaos. Like it got banned afterwards. Like they could never reshow it again because people were calling, mm-hmm. all these things were happening, people were freaking out and all this other stuff. But,
yeah, and I mean, if you know the story of like the War of the Worlds broadcast, it's like that pretty much.
And it's loosely based on the Enfield poltergeist.
Yeah.
But
it was really well done.
I think it was great going in with expectations. I was like, okay, whatever. And I'm a fan. And mm-hmm. I would watch that again. And even though it's 90s, and you can tell the production quality and everything like that, I think it's actually 4:3 when you're watching it. But if you're just looking for something, you don't know it. Like this happens all the time when you're just like, I don't know what I want to watch. And if you have access to AMC Plus, just put it on. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
But segueing into a little self-promo, actually Dad encouraged me to do this. But my own Letterboxd, I basically Letterboxd is a app/website where you can log films that you watch and like write a review and rate it and all of that. And I kind of use it obsessively. You will see me as soon as the credits roll, take out my phone and start typing. But if you want to see what I think about movies, it is EJ Donda, spelled EJDHANDA. So if you just go on Letterboxd and search me up, that's me. And you can see horror movies I like. You can see movies I watch with my dad. things like that. So yeah, little self-promo because cool. I can.
Awesome.
And now I shall hand it over for
I just gonna have to be brief because I have to put it in there. I have to throw my Liverpool quick synopsis brief.
Mm-hmm.
This year has been a crazy year, and from my perspective, it's a sad year because Klopp's leaving, but there is something special about this team. I'm just gonna leave it at that. We're playing the kids, people are injured, this and that. And I am enjoying this season probably more than any season. And I think part of it's because there's this, you know, finality to it in that sense. But it has been fun. And again, we never do anything in the easy way, but we're in it. So I'm happy. And I have no idea when we're going to ever do this next podcast. So at the moment, let's see where it goes. But always a red. So up the reds. All right, so what are we doing? What stories are we got?
Well, I have a paranormal story for you.
Okay.
And you've got a true crime story for me.
I do.
Well, then I guess we should get into it.
We'll let it roll. All right, here we go.
All right. So, Father.
Yes.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the Bridgewater Triangle?
I have. I mean, just heard of it, but I know nothing about it.
Okay.
Well, I should say that, but
I'm not going to talk about the Bridgewater Triangle.
Okay, there we go.
I'm going to talk about a part of the Bridgewater Triangle.
All right.
So before I get into it, a couple disclaimers. Disclaimer number one, also the only disclaimer. I so forgot to look up the pronunciation for so many things. So I am going to butcher them. I already asked you how to do one of them before we started recording, but, there's more and I don't know how to say them. So my apologies. and then item number two, which is not a disclaimer. It's just, I'm going to list the sources I used.
That's good.
Of course I used the lineup because obviously, so many different Wikipedia pages. I also used Only in Your State, another really prolific web source. Boise Ghost, which was like weird.
Boise, Idaho?
Ghost? Well,
is it B-O-I-S-E?
Yeah, but it was talking about Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts.
Well, that's cool. They're representing their state and talking about others.
Yeah. The Herald News, Spooky South Coast. A little bit from CBS.
It went mainstream.
Yeah. a little bit from the Yankee Express.
Okay.
I think this is different than Spooky South Coast, but I also used South Coast Murders and Mysteries. And then a blog from Marianne Pohl. And then I want to give a special shout out to one source that gave me so much information. It's called Mysterious Hills. It's a blog. They have like a WordPress. It might be called The Mysterious Hills.
There are a lot of sources.
Yeah. It was just because there was a lot of fragments that I had to piece together.
Fair enough.
Mysterious Hills. So much information. So great. But so, Bridgewater Triangle. Quick summary. It's a site in Massachusetts. That is said to be a hotspot for paranormal activity. The three points of the triangle are situated in Freetown, Rehoboth.
Yeah.
Rehoboth.
So Freetown, Rehoboth, okay.
And Abington.
And Abington. Okay, I know I've heard of Abington. Rehoboth I've heard of. Freetown, I mean, I feel like every state must have a city like that, or if not, multiple.
Well, we are going to be focusing in the Freetown area today.
All right.
as well as kind of the Fall River area.
Okay, yeah.
So
Fall River is close to your heart, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's very close to my heart. There's a lot of haunted stuff there, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough, yeah.
Never been, but... Anyway, so the idea of the Bridgewater Triangle was popularized, and the term itself was coined by famed cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman. And if you don't remember him, which how could you not, because he is such an A-list celebrity in this house, he is the guy who owns slash founded the Cryptozoology Museum, aka the most well-kept and prestigious institution in America. So, yeah.
You should at least say where it is.
It's in Portland, Maine.
Okay, so there you go.
The International Cryptozoology Museum, I should call it by its government name. So yeah, he's the one who kind of came up with this idea because so much stuff has happened in the Bridgewater Triangle.
Did you have the year when he coined the...
I think it was in the 70s.
70s.
So the Triangle is known for sightings and experiences from everything ranging from UFOs to ghosts to cryptids and more. And one of the proposed reasons for this is the very bloody history of the area. We're going to talk about a little bit about the Hockomock Swamp, which is in the Triangle and specifically near where I'm going to be talking about today, which was used as a battlefield during King Philip's War in the late 1600s.
All right.
So there's a lot of indigenous suffering in this area. And some believe that there are vengeful ghosts from this, or like curses, things like that, based on all of that suffering.
Okay, so this is going back a while.
Yes.
All right.
So around this swamp area and kind of like, I don't know, just in the Bridgewater Triangle itself, many have witnessed what they believe to be a thunderbird, nice. Which is also not what I'm talking about today.
Wow. A lot of herrings here. Okay.
Yeah. So.
I think there's a Thunderbird in the museum, right?
Is there?
I felt like there we saw something, or at least some...
I don't think they have anything that's like a skeleton. I think it's mostly like baseball caps from Finding Bigfoot.
No, they had, well, yeah, okay. I'm not,
I don't think they had a real Thunderbird. Or
real, I was quote just, unquote. Yeah, true. I was just thinking that they had something on display that...
I don't know. Thunderbirds are supposed to have like 12-foot wingspans or something. I feel like we would have really remembered that if we saw one.
I thought they had something. Museum. You're right. It probably wasn't.
They had like a recreation of the Fiji mermaid, I think.
They had Sasquatch.
They did have Sasquatch.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, no.
Because we're not going to be, none of that will be talked about either, so just keep going.
Speaking of Sasquatch, a lot of Bigfoot sightings in this area. And I just found a quote that I thought was really funny. Yeah. Bigfoot. Or come his on. Cousins, I guess.
Wow. I never would have thought in Massachusetts. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, what? I don't know. But I found this quote, this was what I got from CBS News that I just thought was so funny. But one local in the Bridgewater Triangle stated to CBS News, quote, they found Bigfoot's body stretched out on the bank, but he was dead. He died. This
there you go. I mean, hey, you know, detail oriented. Just the facts, man. Just the facts.
This woman identified herself to CBS as, quote, a character on the common. So.
That's how. Okay.
She said character. She's a character on the common.
On the common.
So I don't.
That needs to be used.
Yeah. So all of that kind of is to say that we're not talking about any of that today.
All right.
But we're focusing on a very specific part of the Bridgewater Triangle, which is the Freetown Fall River State Forest.
Now, in the triangle, if the top point is north, where is Freetown in the triangle?
I believe we are southeast.
Southeast. Okay.
Yeah. So we're like kind of
at
near
the bottom corner of the triangle?
Yeah. All
right. Yeah. Right. So eastern. Okay.
Yeah. So. Now, to get into the forest, which is what we are talking about today.
All right.
it was purchased by the state of Massachusetts in 1913 And it began with only 9 acres that was like bought from a private citizen.
Okay.
And then over the next century, the state acquired more and more land for this like public forest. And so as a result, today, it takes up a whopping 5,217 acres.
Oh, wow.
So pretty big. The forest has an array of fun activities for you and the whole family, including hiking trails, some of which can also be used for dog sledding, off-roading, and horse riding.
Oh, wow.
Okay. A picnic area with a wading pool, and a brook stocked with trout in the spring.
Okay.
Hunting is permitted but restricted.
Sure, sure, sure.
Other features or other featured amenities of the forest include unsolved murders, satanic cults, ancient curses, and even an odd cryptid or so.
Okay. All right. So it's got it all.
It's got it all.
Okay.
You know, fun for you and the whole family, all right, as I said. But I'll start with some of the tamer things that have gone on here. There have been numerous reports of abandoned dogs in the forest, kind of like a weird amount. I don't know how many, but all the sources I saw were like, yeah, it's kind of weird how many dogs we keep finding in these woods.
Well, I guess, you know, I mean, if it's easy to just
be
like, here you go, you're done. I mean, it's sad. That's actually a sad thing.
It's
but
pretty sad. And apparently they turn aggressive pretty easily.
Yeah, well, I mean,
so
I guess if you're fighting for food,
Yeah. In 2006, there were reports of an escaped emu walking through the forest, which would charge visitors that happened upon it. So that's kind of a fun one. I think
it was that commercial.
Which commercial?
It's one of those insurance commercials.
It's an ostrich.
No, it's an emu.
I thought it was an ostrich.
It's an emu.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Are you absolutely positive? I am.
It's something. Yeah, I'm 100%. It's an emu.
All right. Okay.
And I still care. Liberty. Liberty.
Yeah.
It's Liberty Insurance. It's an emu.
It's an emu?
Yeah. It's an emu.
Okay. Well, anyway. So, but for all of these delightfully strange and sometimes kind of sad occurrences in the forest, there are as many, if not more, grotesque events. So, shall we get into those?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of what the level is here. So, from our previous...
Escaped emu.
No, no, no. But I'm thinking about, like, when we think grotesque, let's use it in our Evil Dead Rises.
I see, I see.
Is it in that realm of grotesque? Or are we going...
No, to... okay, it's not
so,
that bad.
So, it's not even when... So, it's not even the when evil lurks grotesque.
No, it's definitely not when evil lurks grotesque. It's just grotesque in that murder happened.
Okay, fair enough.
A lot.
Okay.
There. So. All right. So, and it's sad is another thing. It's sad.
Okay.
So, in November of 1978, the body of a 15-year-old girl named Mary Lou Aruda was found tied to a tree in the middle of the forest. See what I mean?
Yeah, no, you've started it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was determined to be a victim of a James M. Cater who had kidnapped her 2 months before from her hometown in Raynham.
Oh, man.
Aruda had been a cheerleader and not the first kidnapping victim of Cater. He'd been convicted of the offense in 1967, but was on probation at the time.
What year was this again?
1978.
78, okay. Oh, man.
Yeah. So he was convicted of Aruda's kidnapping and murder in 1979.
Okay.
But the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court later overturned the verdict. Then he was tried again in 1986. I think he was found guilty again, but that verdict was also overturned. Then he was retried in 1992, and that attempt ended in a mistrial.
Oh my God.
Then finally in 1996, he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison.
Oh, this poor family.
Yeah.
They had to go through this for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then he died in prison in 2016. It's kind of interesting, especially with like all of these like overturned, like repeated trials.
Yeah.
They kind of knew it was him like from the get-go. Aruda was kidnapped on the 8th of September, 1978. And by September 19th of that year, police had photos and information about Cater. Like, they pretty much already knew it was him. And they had all this evidence against him already. Like, he owned a bright green car with a black racing stripe on it. And a car matching that description was seen in the neighborhood around the time of her disappearance. So they really kind of knew it was him from the beginning.
Well, I mean, if they had that many trials, there must have been something, unless they gathered information.
Yeah. You know,
it had to be technicality stuff then if they had physical evidence or another thing. So
yeah.
Oh God, that's awful.
Yeah. So that is the kind of the first like murderous thing that we know about in this forest. Then later in 1980, police were investigating an unrelated murder in the same area when they were approached by several locals who claimed they'd witnessed satanic cult activity in the woods. So,
around... We'll just chalk that up to the 80s.
Well, hold on. I haven't given you the evidence yet of all of the ritualistic satanic cult stuff happening.
Right. Go ahead.
Because there's so much of it. Because everyone was praying to Satan in the 80s.
Sure. Go ahead.
So, around this time, there were murders occurring in the area that were being blamed on a satanic cult. It was, of course, the beginning of Satanic Panic. And so these three murders were being attributed to this like cult activity. There isn't anything about the murders to suggest that they were committed by a cult. But there are a couple details of interest. And I saw some like newspaper clippings from the Boston Globe from like the trial that connects them to this cult activity, but it's like weird. So the first victim was a 17-year-old girl named Doreen Levesque, who was found under the bleachers of a local high school in October of 1979.
Okay.
Now, the third victim, Karen Marsden, was questioned as a potential witness in the case.
Wait, who's the first victim?
This is just a 17-year-old girl.
Oh, you said second victim.
Victim and third victim. I'm not talking about the second one.
My bad. Okay, so go ahead. All right, so
first victim was a 17-year-old.
Right. Third victim was considered a witness.
Yes. Okay. So she was questioned, but she wouldn't identify who the killer was. I can't tell if like they're implying that she knew who the killer was or that she just wouldn't cooperate with police or something. But she refused to identify the killer. She refused an offer of witness protection. And so she asked police to be dropped off at a Fall River church on February 9th, 1980.
Okay.
She was never seen alive again. And that April, her partial remains were found.
So I'm assuming they, to your initial thoughts, that
maybe she was involved.
She knew, and they were like trying to take care of all loose ends.
Yeah. And it kind of seemed like, I don't know if all three of them were involved in sex work, but the 17-year-old disappeared because she was going to, she was on her way to some location, to engage in sex work or like try to break into the industry. I don't know if that's the right term.
No.
But I can't remember if the third victim was in sex work or not.
Okay.
But that also could have been.
And were they known? They were known to each other, I guess, if they.
They seemed to be known to each other. And so the third victim, Karen Marsden, was 20 at the time. So I don't know how they knew each other, but anyway. So a man named Carl Drew was arrested and tried for the killings of all three victims in 1981. He was a pimp and alleged Satanist cult leader.
Okay.
So according to this newspaper clipping I saw from the Boston Globe, a 17-year-old witness who was apparently the roommate of Marsden testified that she was, quote, present during the murders of the two women and a third sex worker. She participated in Marsden's murder while in a trance-like state.
Oh my God. Okay.
The witness apparently attended regular cult meetings that were led by Carl Drew, during which she experienced out-of-body sensations. similar to that.
So did she admit that she was a Satanist?
I don't know if she specifically said, like, I am a Satanist, but she seemed to be like,
thing.
I was being, like, controlled, right. Sort of, is what she was saying.
Gotcha.
So she did admit that she was part of the killings, but she was like,
I was under the influence of the guru or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
So it should be noted that none of these victims were found in the forest that we're talking about. But the reports of Satanist activity within the forest were kind of conflated with this case.
Okay.
So in fact, there are rumors of an ice shack, deep in the woods, where a lot of evidence of the cult activity was found. According to legend, the shack belonged to Carl Drew.
Gotcha.
There is one photo of the shack, which was taken around 1980. But its location is unknown, if it even is still standing. So we don't know where that shack is. But it is sometimes blended in legend with the ice house, which is a ruined stone structure across Watupa Road in Fall River that is also reputed to be a hotbed of occult activity.
Okay.
So visitors to the ice house have reported seeing large dogs, though there's never been any evidence of animals like that found there. And also some have reported being chased away by an unknown presence.
Okay. All right.
But I digress from the forest once again. So locals, while police are investigating, I don't know if they were investigating this case specifically, but they were investigating some kind of murder in the area, and locals kept coming to them being like, hey, we found all these clearings that are stained with animal blood.
Oh my God.
Hikers in particular kept finding what they described as altars, okay. That were stained with blood and remnants of some unholy ritual.
So was there any photographic evidence of any of this stuff, or this was just like hearsay?
I haven't found any.
Okay, no, fair enough. All right.
I don't know. Later, authorities came across some cattle carcasses in those same areas.
In the woods?
In the woods, that were arranged in a manner that seemed to confirm the rumors of ritual sacrifice.
Okay, well, this has legs.
Yes, it does. So I don't know exactly how they were arranged, but apparently they were. It wasn't just like a bunch of cows wandered and then dropped dead.
I don't know enough about cattle to think that they would just wander into a forest.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen a cow in the woods myself. So, I mean,
what's the character on the common think?
Yeah, we should ask her.
That's right.
So then there are more murders that have occurred in these woods. In 1987, a homeless man named Edward C. Coretto was mistaken for an undercover police officer by some locals.
Oh boy.
And they shot and killed him.
In the woods.
In the woods.
The locals were like, oh, it's an undercover cop. Let's just kill the undercover cop.
Yep. I don't know how that happened.
I don't even know if that's your reasoning. But
yeah, it doesn't seem like a reason to kill someone.
I'm just thinking, you know, let's be discreet.
This guy might
be a
cop.
He's an undercover cop. Yeah, let's
kill
him. So, you know, that will solve the problem.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah. Then in 2001, the bodies of two men were discovered on Bell Rock Road, which is in the forest, and their corpses were riddled with bullets. A man was ultimately convicted, with the explanation being that, quote, something went wildly wrong during a routine cannabis purchase.
Oh, my God.
So, I don't know. But there have also been several violent, like, assaults and attacks reported
and
in the area as well.
Still a place for families to go.
Yeah, they've got a picnic area with a wading pool, Dad. Come on.
Okay.
So, beyond the murders and their possible satanic ties, there are a whole slew of other paranormal events. One famous witness was none other than President Ronald Reagan. He was a governor at the time. This was 1974.
So He was governor of California, and now he's in Massachusetts.
He was flying over Massachusetts.
Okay.
I don't think it was like a commercial plane or something. It was like a small one.
Sure.
I don't know planes. Anyway,
he
reported seeing strange lights in the sky while he was flying over the forest. The lights were allegedly tailing his plane. They accelerated, decelerated, and elongated all within minutes. Then they shot upwards at a 45-degree angle and disappeared.
Okay.
So, I mean, if Reagan thinks it's haunted, that it's got to be.
Okay.
That's a president.
Yeah.
And well, we all know that everything that every president says.
All right. We got to stop. You're going to kill me.
So, oh some have claimed that the forest has a dark aura that drives people to suicide.
Oh.
Or has a curse upon it from the indigenous people that used to live there.
Yeah.
In particular, one of the forest's landmarks is called Profile Rock, which resembled a human face before it unfortunately collapsed in 2019. Which I feel like I saw something in the news about this when it happened. I think it was a sad thing. It just
collapsed. Yeah.
But this is where my failure to look up pronunciation is really going to bite me in the ass. But it is said that the rock resembles a Wampanoag sachem called Massasoit.
Okay.
His real name was Usamequin.
Okay.
Something like that. Because Massasoit actually just means like great sachem or great leader.
Okay.
And English colonists just misunderstood and dubbed him by that name. So his son, Metacom, encamped at the site of Profile Rock during King Philip's War. And it is said that his spirit haunts the rock.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, whether the ghost that haunts the rock is him or not, because his ghost has been claimed to haunt many different sites at which he was said to have fought during the war.
Sure.
Many witnesses have seen the apparition of a man sitting on the rock with crossed legs and outstretched arms.
Huh.
A ghost hunting team at Profile Rock, not a famous one.
Good.
It is not your enemy. It's just some...
Famous is like the wrong word, but go ahead.
Yeah. Captured some EVPs at the rock, allegedly saying, quote, "You will serve Satan."
In English.
In English. But I mean, this could be the Satanist killings.
Oh,
not
okay.
The
fair enough. All right.
Wampanoag stuff. Also, I don't think they really had anything to do with Satan.
No.
So,
okay.
Also the name Doreen, who is the first murder victim, and the name Carl Drew.
Huh.
So, another site of paranormal activity, that is specifically rooted in indigenous suffering is Asinet Ledge.
Okay.
Many people have reported seeing, quote, "indigenous spirits weaving in and out of trees, the victims of a 17th century war against the Puritans."
Ooh, okay.
The ledge is also the site of a love story ending in tragedy, as many sites are often connotated with. So as the story goes, a young girl would come to the ledge, I don't know how often, but often to meet her forbidden lover. But when he stopped coming, she threw herself off the cliff in agony, and her spirit still lingers at the site, waiting for him to return to her.
Okay, see that.
Some witnesses have even seen ghostly figures leaping over the edge, only to disappear when the witnesses looked for them in the murky waters below.
Oh, man, that's spooky.
Yeah. Those lingering at the edge have reported unexpected suicidal thoughts.
Oh.
And, quote, "eerie feelings that one is about to be pushed over the edge."
Okay. I hope they do like that once and they're like, okay, we're not coming back.
Yeah. And this kind of ties into one of the cryptids that is said to live here, which is the Puckwudgie.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of the Puckwudgie before. It comes from Wampanoag Native tradition. Most of the mythology about the Puckwudgies has kind of been appropriated and warped in popular media. But it is said that they attack people with poisoned arrows and by pushing them off of cliffs. So Puckwudgies are described, again, this is just one description, and I don't know how accurate it is, But they're described as, quote, troll-like beasts between 2 and 3 feet in height. They sport smooth, hairy, gray skin that is said to glow on occasion.
Huh.
At least 2 people have died falling from Asinet Ledge in recent years, and some people believe that this is the work of the Pukwudgies.
And they just they're just targeting anyone that's on that. It has nothing to do with like you as a person.
No, they're just like kind of mischief makers, okay. And they just kind of fuck shit up.
Yep.
You know?
Yep, yep.
So visitors have seen or have reported seeing strange silhouettes and entities. And some even claim to have seen black helicopters in the sky, which I hadn't heard of, but I think it's like some kind of government conspiracy thing, like Men in Black type thing.
Gotcha.
So some people have claimed to see that.
Okay.
And I will wrap up with just sort of one last story.
Okay.
This has nothing to do with Zach Bagans.
Thank God.
Nothing to do with him. Thanks. He has not touched this as far as I can tell. I just wanted to tell a story of a couple that visited.
Okay.
I don't know if the whole thing is a nature reserve, but like at least part of it is a nature reserve. And a man and his wife were driving along the edge of the forest and looking to kind of visit this reservation. As soon as they parked the car and got out, they began hearing the sound of drums. And it kind of stuck out to them because they hadn't heard anything before getting out of the car, even though they were like driving with the windows down. Nothing until they parked and got out. The two followed the sound as the wife was interested in Native American traditions, which
okay.
struck me as being a little weird, little strange, because yeah. you know how that goes usually.
Yeah.
So she noticed that, or I guess both of them noticed the air was getting cooler around them, even though it was the middle of summer.
Ooh.
So as they're kind of following the sound, the drums grow louder and faster, but the man and his wife could not see a soul anywhere.
Huh.
That is, until they turned a corner and the wife noticed 5 columns of smoke. She described them as they looked like dark rain clouds, but the height of a person. They weren't moving or anything. They were just there. The wife was convinced that this was something spiritual.
Right.
And so she led the two of them slowly back to the car.
Yeah.
Good on her for not like being like, wow, they're yes. letting us see their ritual. The man, however, was really spooked by this.
Right.
And certain that the entities were separate from the drummers and that they were drawn to the couple for some reason and were watching them.
Huh.
But that is the last story I have Ooh. For you about the...
That's...
yeah. Freetown Fall River State Forest.
Oh my.
With picnic areas and a wading pool. So stop on by next time you're in the area.
I think I have a song idea for this.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. I had an idea, but I didn't know what I was going to do for
right.
sure. So
all right.
I guess we'll see.
We will. All right. No, that was good. I like that one. I had no idea.
I'm glad because I was convincing myself while I was writing it that you had already told this story.
No.
I was like panicked, like scrolling through our episodes. Like, are there any song titles here that are like forest related? Like,
I will say that the because it's been a while, the same thing. I'm like going through my, because I have my list of stuff that I stored mm-hmm. away. And I'm going, did I do that one? Like, should have deleted the ones.
I can check if I've done this, but I have no clue if you've done this before. So,
well, that was good. I like that. That's good to know. Hey, all right, cool. Good to bring it to, you know, the home state there.
Yeah.
Cool. Well done. All right. So, I'm doing a true crime.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like we were saying before, all these stories. Did we do this before that? It took me a while to get back into like, how do we do this again?
Yeah, I had to keep referring to my old notes. I was exactly. like, what is the formatting?
Well, it's, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that was it.
Yeah, no. I was going through all my, like, I have everything on my Google Drive. So I had to go back to my template and then I had to go back to a couple stories. And I was like, how did I do this? What did I go through? And then everything else. But even setting this up, we were joking around before we started about how do we connect what to where? It's sad. It's a sad state of affairs.
After graduation.
Okay. All right. It's not that sad. So true crime. This is a serial killer. It's relatively recent. It was in 2018.
Wow.
And it takes place in Laredo, Texas. My sources, and this is interesting. So I guess in 2018, mm-hmm. I had found the story and I pinned it from Texas Monthly. So I put that down. And then since that time, a whole bunch of other things have happened.
Oh, wow.
So when I went, which was kind of cool, because, and I looked at a bunch of other ones too, mm-hmm. where they were talking about this. So it wasn't that it wasn't solved or if there was some, but there was some ambiguity about these mm-hmm. things. And a lot of these stories now have closed. So I was like, oh, I'm going to keep some of these together.
That is really cool.
So the New York Times, I used that. I used ABC News. Actually, I don't know if it was ABC News or I think ABC News did a, like, I don't know what their, not Dateline, but they have their mm-hmm. true crime.
Like 2020 or something, right?
Yeah. Maybe they're 2020, 48 hours. But there was Paula Zahn, who's like a pretty famous reporter or now mm-hmm. Anchor. She did a whole 30-minute
report.
I didn't watch it because I was like just worried because of how, you know, how those are always edited a certain way.
Yeah.
But the article was pretty good. And then NPR did a really good article on it. And then The Guardian was my favorite. So Texas Monthly was the original. Mm-hmm. The Guardian was the most recent. So I kind of used those two. And it was really interesting because the things that Texas Monthly started, because it was when it happened, mm-hmm. they just kind of wrote in, you know, real time.
Right.
And then The Guardian had their version, which was really interesting because things were slightly different and how things happened. So if I can remember those pieces, I'll try to call those out.
I just think it's so funny when we do a true crime versus a paranormal, our sources are so different because mine's like, here's this listicle I found on BuzzFeed and yours is like, here's this award-winning news network.
But I will say, like, going back to the lists, like you were saying, I remember the lineup, all that is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I love
those. Medium was a big one.
Right. So you're hoping, like, I mean, I guess some of these were recent, but you're hoping that they're still around because there's just something about it. But, and I think the best are those, you know, the Seacoast ones, like the smaller mm-hmm. ones that have people who are still into that kind of thing.
Yeah, I like reading people's blogs.
Yeah, it's cool because, you know, there's a passion to it that you're going to hear.
But it's still really funny when you came right out of the gate with, like, the New York Times. And I was like, here's, you know, this person's WordPress blog. Not that is any less
reputable. I was
going to say,
from a journalist, like, especially in these days.
Especially the New York Times.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, well. Yeah,
but still, it's just funny the difference. Anyway, continue.
No worries. Okay, so when I first came across the story way back, mm-hmm. I thought, I was like, wait, I read a book about this, like a fictional thing. So I was like, is the book based on this?
Ooh.
And then I was like, well, as I was thinking more and more and more, I was kind of going, there are a lot of fictional stories that are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was looking at the timeline at all, because when I first got through it, these books had been written years previous. So then I'm kind of like, was this an inspiration? But it's not. There's no way. But I don't want to say that it's predictable, but I think when you start hearing it, you're going to be like, oh yeah, no, this is like I saw this on Criminal Minds or something.
Oh, right.
Like that.
Well, I mean, probably.
Yeah. So, but I feel like still that might have been previous to this 2018 mm-hmm. thing. But like I said, I do not believe that the killer gained any inspiration from other things like this or stories or any of those kind of books. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you may have heard this in the news because there was a lot of, after things were getting close to closure, there was a lot of news about it. And I didn't remember it particularly, but there were certain things I kind of was like, oh yeah, I think I heard that. All right, so I'm going to kind of set the scene.
Mm-hmm.
We're in Laredo, Texas. Mm-hmm. It's a border town with Mexico. The Rio Grande separates mm-hmm. Laredo. It is the largest border crossing for goods traded between Mexico and the United States. I think LA used to be, or not LA, sorry, Southern California had a large port before, mm-hmm. but this now is the number one place. It has there's an international bridge that crosses over between the two areas between these two countries, and 2 million tractor trailers will cross back and forth yearly. Laredo, on the United States Texas side, is considered a safe city, and that's partially due because there's many border control offices and things like that there. The twin city on the other side is called Nuevo Laredo, and it is not safe. Like, to the point where, as I was reading, they were interviewing folks and people would talk about just, you know, gunfire is like white noise in the background. Like, you hear it all around the area. Many Mexican immigrants basically come over daily, you know, like come for the day for like labor and go back, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like they're invading at the for all the whatever. I'm not going to get into that. But anyway, they're going across basically as day laborers. Others actually come across based on, you know, how often they can give blood because they can make money on that. So that's how they're basically making money, is that, you know, I don't know how often you can do it, if it's like every month or every 6 months or whatever it is, but that's a lot going just to the local places to give blood. And then there are, of course, sex workers that will come over and then go back, but they don't stay in Laredo, which is kind of interesting. Laredo, the town, like I said, safe city. It's pretty big. I think it's the third largest city, and it's south of San Antonio. But there is a stretch called San Bernardo Avenue, which is like their main street.
Okay.
And that is where the sex workers work in, you know, there are shops, in the evening, it's just there. And they're mostly made up by locals, right? So it's kind of this weird thing where that, you know, it's not a hidden thing. It's, and again, I don't think, I don't know enough about the sex workers or even the industry in itself, but there's a support group. So I'm not saying there aren't in other places, but in Laredo, okay, yeah, you know, you're doing your thing. And we kind of get it. And the interesting part is, like, throughout that time, most people knew each other, the locals, as well as the sex workers themselves. But that kind of changed demographically after 2018.
Okay.
Right? So let's get into the crime timeline.
Crime timeline! Wow, I totally forgot that was part of it.
I don't think I did a true crime in a long time. I'd written so many of my own that this is like the first time in a long time.
That just like awoke in me, like I was like a sleeper agent.
All right, so there was a reason for the sex workers being local residents. Mm-hmm. Even though it was low violence or crime in general, there was a pretty strong drug problem. Heroin. I don't think they got into, I don't know, Oxy, I don't think was the issue there, but it was mostly, you know, heroin. I think there was some cocaine. And again, this is not like the Mexican cartel type of thing, but the area is vibrant in the sense that the high school was pretty decent, or the schooling and the public schools were pretty strong. And like I said, the community within the sex worker group was a known community. Some of these women, because of their addiction, you know, they all tried to fight it, right? Like, this is not what they want to do, but they couldn't hold jobs. So then they ended up, this was just kind of the thing they had to do. So a lot of these women had children who lived with their mothers then. And then, you know, this was like, okay, I'm going out, going to do my thing, and then I'm going to come back kind of thing. But all of them were on a path trying to, you know, like, I'll get clean, do whatever I can and go through it. So it's just that kind of vicious circle. But San Bernardo, people know each other. One of these people, in 2018, her name was Melissa Ramirez. She was 29 years old, and she had been working that avenue for almost on and off for about a decade. Okay. She was a strong student growing up, but then she had trauma. She was sexually assaulted by, I believe it was an uncle. And then later she was assaulted by a friend, which just put her towards you know, downward spiral, and the support wasn't there. And I mean, like, we've heard the story so many times, right? No one believes anyone. Mm-hmm. Schools don't help with these kind of things. So she then became addicted to alcohol and drugs. As I mentioned before, like, her mother supported her. I think she had three children that pretty much lived with her mother, and she lived with her mother as well. In the spring of 2018, she had met a client that was different than any other. He frequented San Bernardo, and it's not that he wasn't looking for sex, but didn't believe in intercourse. It was just oral. It was oral sex if it was going to be sex.
Okay.
But the other times it was just let's go for a ride. Let's drive around. I mean, I'm not saying this guy's a good guy, but he would then sometimes take her back to his house. He was married. He had children, but when they were away, they would go and he'd either make dinner, they'd watch movies. It was just conversational, right? So this had been going on for about 6 months, you know, in the spring it started. So she confided in a couple of her friends on the avenue of this gentleman and just saying that this is just kind of weird. And another friend, Claudine Luera, she's like, yeah, no, this is too good to be true. I'm not into whatever. But then she met him. And he did the exact same thing. Like, you know, bring her back to the house, this and that. I don't think it went on for the 6 months as much, but same, you know, went through. And then another friend, this woman, Erica Pena, also met the gentleman and similar scenarios, you know, just watching movies. He would make dinner, you know, things like that. On September 2nd of 2018, this is I think it's a Sunday before Labor Day. The gentleman picked up Ramirez from the avenue. You know, they do their thing, whatever. On Labor Day itself, Ramirez's mom, her name was Christina Benavides. She called her daughter. Like, she wasn't worried at that perspective because overnight, whatever, like, she knew she was working. And Ramirez didn't answer, right? Which was odd because it wasn't that she wouldn't answer, you know, maybe it would be a little bit longer, but she loved her kids. So it was a matter of, okay, you know, if you're coming, are you coming for breakfast? Are you going to see them? This, that, whatever it may be. But it got to a point where she's like, this is not normal. So immediately she went straight to the avenue. And was kind of like, hey, you know, talking to friends, have you seen Melissa? She's not answering. What's going on? And, you know, the main street has very well lit areas, right? With stores and everything else. And then, you know, it goes on. And then there are places where they're kind of, you know, not so, lit, I guess, right? So she goes to these other areas. She finds Claudine Luera and says the whole thing. Like, you know, have you seen her? What's going on? She's like, no, I haven't seen her. Actually, I haven't seen her this whole weekend. So they're trying to figure it out. They're talking to other people. They're like kind of meeting as many folks as possible. No one hears a thing or knows a thing. In a remote part of town, on an access road, a rancher is just surveying his land and whatever it is. And as he's in this access road, he stops and finds this body. Just not hidden, like just on there. The side of the road.
Oh my God.
Prone to like all to see. And he's, you know, he gets closer and I mean, he knows right away that it's a body, but when he gets there, he realizes that the woman's not breathing. And he notices that there's a head wound. So he immediately calls 911 to basically report this thing. And as he's talking to her, he goes, I think it's a gunshot wound. I mean, he knows enough about it. And as he's talking to the police, they're like, all right, you know, we're on our way. And it's not, you know, he's talking about access roads. So he's kind of got to kind of explain. After he gets off the phone, like the weirdest thing happened. This is stranger than fiction. He's still by the body waiting for them mm-hmm. to come. And all of a sudden, in the distance, he sees a police car coming. He's Whoa. Like, this is odd. Like, how could this happen? I mean, I just called. What are the chances?
Right.
So as the police car is coming down this access road and getting closer and closer, you know, he's waving them down mm-hmm. to basically the car comes and then slows because he can see the body, mm-hmm. stops, turns, takes off.
What?
All like cartoon arc of, you know, my dust, God. This kind of thing goes on. And the guy's like, what the, this is insane. And he's still trying to figure out why the cop is going away. Uh-huh. Time passes. Police show up. Mm-hmm. Other police. And he's explaining to them that this is weird. Like, I called, this other guy came, blah, blah, blah. They're like, no, that is odd. But they're, you know, of course, now they're on the scene. They're going through. They realize that it was a gunshot wound mm-hmm. to the head, a 40 caliber gun, and it was execution style.
Jeez.
Okay. So it didn't take long to ID the body as Melissa Ramirez. Mm-hmm. And news broke out in the town that there had been this murder. But the thing that really broke out was that this, the rumor about there was a cop beforehand right. took off. Mm-hmm. And from the rancher's perspective, he was kind of like, it's when the guy saw the body is when he went through. And so immediately the police are like, crap. You know, one of our own, right? Mm-hmm. So they're basically now trying to figure out how this happened. She's known now, like they're starting to interview all the folks on the boulevard. Mm-hmm. And because it's a border town and, you know, these access roads are kind of out wherever, there are cameras everywhere. Mm-hmm. So part of that is that, okay, well, at least we can start to look for cameras. So as they're talking to the other sex workers on San Bernardo, they're just trying to piece things together. They're asking about, have you seen police guards? Have you seen cops in mm-hmm. a non-uniform? Do you know of folks? And, you know, it's a very weird thing because they're not going to admit, because even though it's known and it's open, they're yeah, not going to
still legal
say, yeah, right. So they ended up bringing in like state agencies because they didn't know, because they could have been one of their own.
Right.
So Texas Rangers kind of came in, that kind of thing. And another piece of information that came out, and I don't know if this was from Christina or Melissa's mother mm-hmm. or from some of the friends, that they had noticed that somehow she remembered a black pickup truck, Ram pickup truck. Mm-hmm. So that also became a point of contention or a point of investigation. Let's mm-hmm. look for these things. So they're asking the other sex workers, black trucks, pickup truck, this one, this, you know, people that gave off authority vibe, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And they end up narrowing it down to about three suspects.
Okay.
Right. So they're trying to keep it. And I think at this point, the police are assisting, but the Rangers are doing most of the work. Right. So as they're narrowed down these leads, they basically are like, okay, so we're looking for maybe a black pickup truck. We're looking for these cars maybe specifically. So we need to figure out if we can get access to surveillance. So they exhausted most of this information and went through it all. And they basically said, all right, well, where are we going to get surveillance from? And they talked to the Border Patrol, who had an intelligence office not too far away. I think it was further up near San Antonio. Mm-hmm. So they're like, yeah, here's all, we'll look through all the footage. So they went through the three cars, any black pickup trucks, and they ended up clearing all the suspects because oh. they weren't anywhere near the distance. And I think, which I still didn't understand this, and I don't know if that officer ever came forward, but it was completely coincidence of what happened.
Yeah.
What they found out after the fact was this policeman was coming there because he was looking at land
oh.
at a different area. And I think he also got in trouble because he was driving his police car, but his mm-hmm. daughter was in the car. So while he was driving and when he came upon the body,
oh.
he was like, she can't see this. And that's why he took off. So it was for a period of time, they were focusing on one of our own. Right. Is this an authority person? Blah, 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 blah. Oh. So they lost time on trying to figure this out. So there were no other leads now. Investigators are back to ground zero, and anyone could have been a suspect. You know, I mean, like anyone crossing the border, all these other things going through and through. So they're starting from ground zero again, trying to piece things together. They go back, they start interviewing the sex workers again for any little bit of knowledge. And they're making no progress. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever. On September 13th, so that's 10 days later from when they found the body, mm-hmm. another body was found. Ugh. Claudine Loera.
Oh, no.
Claudine was much older. She was 42. She had been kind of the matriarchal figure for some of these people, mm-hmm. for some of the sex workers. But she was discovered on another access road about 2 miles from where Ramirez was found. Mm-hmm. She had been shot in the head with a 40 caliber, mm-hmm. Or shot in the head, but they found a 40 caliber casing at the scene. Shockingly, at the time, she wasn't dead. So they rush her to the hospital, okay? Mm-hmm. And later, she was pronounced dead there. Now, at this time, right, mm-hmm. rumors are still rampant. Like, as much as they're saying that it wasn't a cop, no one believes that mm-hmm. because they're like, they're just covering up for themselves. So all the sex workers are kind of like, what's going on? People in this town, like, the parent, like, there's usually no violence in this area. Mm-hmm. The police try to hold on. I don't want to say cover up is too strong of a word, but they're not connected. They're not publicly connecting the information. So mm. the sex workers don't know that another one of theirs has died. Mm. Similar gunshot, this and that. So they're really trying to keep it quiet. Now, this would have happened, and maybe nothing would have been known or longer or more time would have passed, but there was a character of the common.
Oh, my God.
There was this woman. Her name was Priscilla Villarreal, who was a citizen journalist.
Oh. Right?
So she was fight for the rights of the locals. Mm-hmm. Right? Probably had a blog, for all we know.
Yeah, I was going to say, a blogger.
Right. And she had nicknames of, I don't remember what it was in Spanish, but it was basically the crazy lady is what people would call her. And she had a pulse of Laredo, right? So as much as there wasn't violent crime, I mean, there was definitely crime. Mm-hmm. And she was also, you know, it's kind of like the ghost of Tom Joad type of thing. You know what I mean? Like she was a proponent of the less fortunate, right? Mm-hmm. So she was monitoring what was going on. So when the first murder happened, she had her tentacles into like mm-hmm. what was going on. So she went to the boulevard or to the avenue to be like, you know, just so you guys know, there's something bad going on. Be careful, you know, just be aware, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. When the second death happened, she overheard it. I don't know if it was on the scanner or whatever it may be, but she got to the hospital, found out somebody spilled and said it was the 40 caliber, this mm-hmm. and that. So before it even got out to the public, she was going out to the avenue and telling everyone, like,
good for her.
This is bad. Yeah. Like, there's something going on. This is two killings, similar MO, and just saying, you need to get off the streets. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I think if they could, they would, but when you're desperate, you have to do what you have to do. So she even got to the point where she became a taxi service to, like, I will be around. And the black pickup Ram was still, like, there. Everybody's just like, there's something about this truck. Mm. Be careful, be careful. Now, she almost was like this single army, you know, one woman army, mm-hmm. where she was just, police weren't happy, Texas Rangers weren't happy because she was just vocal, mm-hmm. letting everyone know and this kind of that. So the pressure started to mount because people were, you know, there were vigils on the street. You know, these are our daughters. You know, what's going on? You know, this is our town, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. So with all this going on, they went back to the Border Patrol intelligence group and just said, okay, we need to go back to Ramirez, mm-hmm. and we need to look for any similar cars now. Like, now we're not even looking for those. We need to look for all cars that happen when Ramirez and through this period of Luera.
Mm-hmm.
So they are scouring everything and looking for any similarities, any you know, suspicious cars, this and that. And this is taking, of course, time. And they don't find any black pickup trucks at all. No similar cars, nothing that they could flag. So they're back again at ground zero, right? Yeah. So I think in that period of time, it was like 24 hours nonstop of just searching stuff. Fast forward 36 hours, September 14th. Now, Luera's body had been found. Everybody knows this has happened. This has gone through. Erica Pena is on the avenue.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it was weird. One article was saying that Villarreal was like, this is that night. Like, people, please go home. Like, this is too, just please, please, please. Because I think in that 36 hours, I realized that everything was connected as well, that kind of thing. But she was desperate. She didn't want to be there, but she needed the money. And I don't know if it was from addiction or what it was, but she had to be out there. But she was hyper vigilant.
Mm-hmm.
She turned down some clients just from the vibe not being right, this or that, or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And then her gaze fixated on this one vehicle coming towards her because she's like, I know that car. And as this car comes in, she recognizes the face and she puts a smile. It's a gentleman.
Mm.
And he's driving a white Dodge Ram.
Oh.
So she gets inside the car. He's like asking her if she's okay. She is like talking about how freaked out she is. And then he's like, look, we'll just go. My family's out of town. Let's go back to the house. Dinner. I get it. You know, let's just go away. So she's in the car and she's like, wow, I've never seen you in your work attire before. And he's like, yeah, I just got off work. It's like, all right. So she doesn't hesitate. They're making small talk, you know, are you leaving work? What's going on? Like, oh yeah, I just got off, blah, 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 blah. So they drive to his home. Still, everything seems fine. They get into the house and now he's, you know, doing a thing. And she's looking at him and she's like, hey, do you know anything about Melissa's murder?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy stops and is like, well, why are you asking? I mean, this is an odd thing to be going through. And she could tell the temperature of the room, everything changes. Mm. And she's kind of like, well, you know, I figured you might know something. And he's like, why do you know? And she's like, well, I mean, you work for the authorities. Look at the what you're wearing here. You're in a uniform. And again, he's changed his demeanor and everything. And the reason she's asking is because his uniform is that of the Border Patrol.
Oh, fucking, of course.
So at that moment, Pena becomes nauseous.
Mm.
And she runs out of the house and throws up all over the front of the place. He doesn't even skip a beat. Like, he walks out, takes a hose, cleans it all up. And she's like, I'm not feeling great. And he's like, understood. Let me take you back. So they get in the car and they start driving and he's like, look, you need some food. You need something. Like, you seem ill. Let's just stop at this gas station convenience store. I'll get you ginger ale or whatever, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So they get there. He gets her stuff. They get back in the car. And at one point, she gets the courage to ask him again, like, do you know anything about Melissa? And at that moment, he just looks at her, leans over to the glove box.
Oh, God.
Pulls out a .40 caliber gun.
Oh, my God.
Points it into her chest. And at that moment, she just, like, adrenaline rushes, pops open the door, jumps out. He grabs her shirt, rips it off her body.
Oh, my God.
She gets out, right? So they're still at the station. And at that moment, he's looking, she's screaming, this guy's trying to kill me, this guy's trying to kill me.
Uh-huh.
He just takes off. Just by chance, there is a state trooper
on the
other side of the gas station.
Holy shit.
Filling up, right? And the guy's like, what the? He gets to her, talks to her, she's explaining what's happening. And by that time, the guy's long gone.
Right.
So they take her to the police station, uh-huh. and she just tells them everything. Like, he met me here, brought me to his house, blah, blah. And they're like, well, do you know his name? She's like, I don't know his name. Mm. We call him the gentleman, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, what do you know? He goes, well, I know he works for some kind of authority. Mm-hmm. I think Border Patrol. And they're like, okay. She's like, he took me to his house. I'm like, you know where he lives? She's like, yeah. So they drive to his house.
Oh my God.
When they get to the house, they walk in and it's like they're searching, but they find an arsenal of weapons.
Oh, fucking course.
And they find his ID.
Oh.
His name? Mm. Juan David Ortiz.
I feel like I know that name.
He is the head of the senior intelligence of the Border Patrol.
Oh, so my God.
He's the guy that looked at all the video footage through all the time. And he's the
my
one
God.
Who gave all the information about, yes, found it, didn't find it, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, my God.
So, of course, now they're like, all right, we're putting a bolo out, APB, whatever, on a white Dodge Ram truck, pickup uh-huh. truck. His description and everything else. Okay. So let's go back in time now.
Right? Okay.
When they were at the gas station,
right, yeah,
and he tried to, you know, point the gun at her and everything like that. Uh-huh. When he took off, where do you think he went?
Well, not home. Across the border?
He went home.
He went home?
He went straight home and loaded up on ammo.
Oh, my God.
So at that period of time when they were interrogating or interviewing, I should say, Pena, he went there and then, no joke, all this time when they're now going to the house, where do you think he went after that?
Oh, God. He's got all this ammo?
Yep.
Is he now going across the border?
Nope. Ugh. He drives right back to St. San Bernardo Avenue.
To the avenue.
He drives his truck, goes through, and he picks up 34-year-old Griselda Hernandez. He drives her 20 miles on the highway out over to this overpass. Orders her out of the car, shoots her twice in the neck, doesn't kill her.
Oh, my God.
Then takes an object and bludgeons her.
Oh, my God.
Gets back in his car. Where does he go?
You keep asking me these questions. Does he go back to the avenue?
Back to the avenue.
Oh, my God.
This time, he picks up 25-year-old Janelle Ortiz, no relation, drives 15 miles on this other highway, stops.
Oh, my God.
Tells Janelle to get out of the car and shoots her in the back of the head. Basically, again, excuse.
So he's like on a spree now. Yeah.
So what's interesting, what's sickening, is that with Janelle, he basically ended up coming towards Bernardo at a different area in this underpass mm-hmm. where there was two women mm-hmm. and basically said which one, and that Janelle. Oh, so like,
just happened to
just
be.
Just say, I'm there. Both of those murders, 2 hours.
Oh my God.
Within 2 hours of each other. Ortiz, after that, where do you think he goes?
Does he go back to the avenue?
Back to the avenue.
Oh, my God.
So he's on his way back, but he has to pee. So he stops at a convenience store.
Uh-huh.
Goes into the back to use the bathroom. And again, by chance, there is a trooper.
Oh, my God.
At this convenience
store. How is all of this happening?
And he recognizes the truck
mm-hmm.
and immediately starts going towards there, looks in the car. And he actually calls for backup to apprehend Ortiz.
Uh-huh.
Somehow, Ortiz escapes.
Oh, my God.
And takes off to a local parking garage.
Uh-huh.
But he had left his gun in the car.
Okay.
So they find the gun, 40 caliber.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. So now he is basically cornered in this parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
They're all trying to talk to him. And all he's trying to do is like, I want to talk to my wife. He starts Facebook posting,
mm-hmm.
telling him, and he makes them comment like farewell to everyone, that kind of thing. All this is happening.
Weird.
Villarreal
uh-huh.
is on her scanner and hears it all.
Uh-huh.
So she is at some other place, goes storming out there and starts live feeding on Facebook what's going on. You know, that
wow.
kind of thing. They finally apprehend him.
Okay.
They get him, and they bring him to the station. He's not cooperating. All he wants to do is that I want to talk to my wife. I want to see my kids. He's, you know, stalling this and that. He only admits that he had been a client of or solicited Ramirez and Pena, and that was the only thing. So yeah, you know, they may have had sex or something like that. So he ends up pleading not guilty, but in that, and again, I don't know if his lawyer's here at this point, but at some point he basically says, you know, it's God's will. Like, God wants the scum of the earth taken off the blah, 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 blah.
What?
So he's still pleading not guilty. Now, that's how the first article ended, because that's when they got caught.
Uh-huh.
Fast forward now, years later.
Right.
In 2022, he ends up going to trial.
Uh-huh.
And partly COVID, that's all these things delayed everything. And he's still pleading not guilty. And he then started, I don't know if it's cross-examination. I don't know how this must have all happened in trial. But he then admits that Ramirez was his mistress because they had been seeing each other for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. So he was going through all that and that he had confided. Like, friends knew of a woman. They didn't know who it was. So part of what they tried to bring up in the trial was that he was suffering from PTSD. He was in the Iraq war, and they were saying that a lot of that was a part of the issue, but folks that he knew in his in those days, he was showing him pictures that Ortiz had showed pictures of Ramirez as his mistress, and he's like, what are you doing, you have a wife and this and that. Mm-hmm. So they were saying it was really weird on his demeanor because it never changed, but then as they went further and further, he became like this Christian, you know, like, I don't want to use the wrong word. Highly religious. God speaks to me. All these things are bad. Sin, you know, I was doing a favor to the city, the
like
town.
An extremist.
Yeah. But people, I mean, I guess he was brought up church, but it was just a weird disconnect. So all of a sudden he became this, I am the writer of wrongs. Right. And finally, he admitted to killing Ramirez and Luera. He did admit that he also, like, you know, he had solicited all three.
Mm-hmm.
And on December 7th of 2022, he was convicted and sentenced to life without parole because he did that because of they took the death penalty off the
table
that,
like a deal.
That he so he pled instead of that. So, but that is the story.
Holy shit.
So yeah, that all.
Oh my God.
So at the time too, that the border patrol became a hot topic because they were just trying to figure out who they're hiring, how they were hiring. Because at the time they were trying to get as many people as possible. But I guess he did have some, if in testing from on the mental side, there were flags, but yeah, I mean, it went on for whatever, 2 weeks, and he hid evidence the whole time, and no one thought to look at
it. That is insane.
And there you go.
Wow, that was good. That was really good.
Cool, cool. Let's wrap this up.
Okay, well, I didn't look up any fun facts. Our stories were long enough, but that's about it from us. I don't know when our next special episode will be. Hopefully,
we thank everyone for listening, and you know, it's great. It's cool to get comments from folks. Everyone's like, "Hey, you gonna do another one? When's Emma back home next?" Blah blah blah. So it's cool. We appreciate it. It's fun that we can bring a little bit of I don't know, entertainment.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
I really missed, I didn't realize how much I missed, like, taking notes on all of the things and being, like, going into a rabbit hole, kind of.
Yeah, it's a good, it's actually a good skill, or maybe skill's not the right word, but I think it does help you prepare for stuff. So it's from that, and I know we do this research when you're in school and all these other things, but it's a good way to just kind of get your thoughts down and thinking, come to a solution or something. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, given that the only social media that we are still semi-active on is Instagram, I would encourage you to follow us there at Everything In Podcast if you want to keep up with any new updates that we decide to put out. Of course, you can listen. Of course, you're already listening, but you can listen wherever you want, really. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, if you think of it, we're probably there. So catch up on all of our old hits. And we'll be back at some point for sure.
I think so. I definitely think so.
Yeah. And I think I just wanted to wrap up because I was just talking to Dad about this. But given that it is 2024 and there are a lot of, you know, horrible things happening, I just wanted to give a little very clear statement that our podcast is in favor of freeing Palestine.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I think the world is I don't even know how to start. I feel for all mm-hmm. for all the folks going through there, and
yeah, we are against genocide here. So
yeah, no, I think that's the piece, and I think
ceasefire now, free Palestine. That's all I have to say.
Well, hopefully to better times, because you know we also have our election coming. So please, let's not go backwards. We've seen enough of it.
Well, that's too much to talk about at the end of the podcast. Fair enough. We'll see you when we see you.
Yes.
Bye.
Till the next time.